Cool. So, good evening. It's good to be with all of you. And I want to thank Denise and Len for opening up your home and to create this beautiful space that we can learn some Torah. And just a little background on why I chose to do this. And I shared this in Shul the other night, but I think it's an appropriate thing to begin with. So, there's a very beautiful midrash that talks about how Rabbi Akiva was once giving a class, and he noticed that everyone's falling asleep. And, you know, which is a very common thing for rabbis to experience, people are falling asleep. And so he kind of like shifts out of it, and he says, what am I going to do to wake him up? And he tells them, he just kind of asks this question, why was it that Esther Hamalka, that Queen Esther, merited to rule over 27 provinces?
It's a difficult door. No, it's not tough.
127, what did I say? Just 27? 100. Why was it that Esther was able to rule over 127 provinces? And he said, because Sarah lived for 127 years. Okay. So that was like that's the midrash. It's a famous midrash, and you know, I've brought it in the past to explore this idea of how, you know, we do things, we act in a certain way in this world. We don't necessarily know the impact of our our actions. So you know, the midrash says that Sarah lived such a powerful and meaningful and beautiful full life of 127 years, and that had an impact many generations later when the Jews needed it to allow for Esther to be able to rule over what she did and to have the role that she played. So as I shared that in Shul, I was kind of like, Why did the Midrash kind of frame it within this scenario of the students falling asleep? Right? Like, why do they have to mention that part of it? Oh, the students fell asleep, so Rabbi Akiva told this. And that was kind of like the question that I had. And I got home from Shul just after Marg around this time, and I took a book off the shelf. I've been thinking about this book a bunch recently, which is Rabbi Nachman's Tales. And I just said, I'm going to start reading, you know. And I normally don't read the translator's, you know, preface. But I said, you know what, whatever. And I started to read the translator's preface. And on the second page was that midrash that I just quoted, like 10 minutes earlier, right? The midrash of Rabbi Akiva giving over this class and everyone falling asleep. And him saying, you know, why was it that Esther ruled, right? And so that for me was like, whoa. You know, because I had that question. But not only that, that little midrash was brought within the context of why were they falling asleep, right? What does it mean what they were falling asleep? Because I had this idea, it's like, if them falling asleep must mean something else. And that's exactly what Rabbi Nachman, what they were relating to here, that yes, the falling asleep wasn't just that they were bored. The falling asleep represented an existential coma. Right, a real falling asleep, a spiritual falling asleep. And in that translator, actually there, I think it was actually the publisher's preface, it was said how Rabbi Nachman told stories to wake people up. Just like Rabbi Akiva told people the story, related to it in a different way, and he kind of realized, I can't tell the Torah the same way. I can't teach Torah the same way. I got to tell a story to wake people up. So too, right? That's what Rabbi Nachman of Breslov did. And that for me was a sign that at least I need to be learning, reading Rabbi Nachman's stories now. And I thought it would be appropriate to share them with other people as well. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, many people are familiar with him. I've spoken a lot about him in terms of, you know, and we all know the song, right? And all the, you know, Rabbi Nachman, everyone, that's what I say in school. I say Rabbi Nachman, that's, everyone knows that, but who is he, right? Who was he? Rabbi Nachman is one of the most influential teachers of Torah of all time. Certainly in a contemporary sense, and we're talking contemporary the past, you know, 200, 300 years, right? But to this day, we all know what impact he has and what impact his Torah is having on the Jewish world. So much so that on Rosh Hashanah, right, every year, even in the midst of war, upwards of 50, 60,000 Jews go on Rosh Hashanah to his grave in Uman, because he said that they should, and is growing in popularity every year. And it's not just because of this wild, right, kind of experience, which it is, but Rabbi Nachman's Torah speaks to our generation in ways that not everybody's Torah does. And so again, he's, even though he passed away, you know, over 200 years ago, his Torah is very, very real for people. So Rabbi Nachman was born in 1772, and he was the great-grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, who started the Hasidic movement. And from a very young age, he was kind of seen as something special, someone special, and had the capacity to learn Torah and to give over Torah, even at a very young age, in a remarkable way. He was kind of on a particular path that was pretty straightforward for who, you know, someone who would inherit a Hasidic dynasty. And then he kind of had some sort of shift, and it inspired him to travel to Eretz Yisrael, which you can imagine is a very dangerous thing to do in those days, and it was dangerous. And he, you know, he got kidnapped, and you know, he had to deal with pirates, and he deal with, you know, it was kind of a wild thing. And you can read his story, maybe that we can do that at some point. He tells over the story of his travels. It's a pretty wild sort of experience. He goes to Eretz Yisrael, and then he, the story goes, I'll just say, just for the sake of, because this is where we're at, he was traveling with one of his kind of shamashim, you know, his confidants, the one who's looking after him. They do this whole crazy trip. He gets to Eretz Yisrael, and he walks 4 amot, and he turns to the guy he's traveling with, and he was like, all right, let's get back on the boat, and that's it. Not because, you know, not because, like, I'm over it, but because, like, that's it. That's all we need to do. I just need you to walk. And the guy's like, listen, let's at least get a falafel. Like, what's going on? So they, you know, they get the falafel. He stays in Israel for a little bit, and it completely changes his perspective on everything. The story goes that he then burns all of his writings. He burns everything because he realizes that they're no longer relevant. Many people, there's a modern scholar named Roger Kamenetz who makes an interesting and beautiful connection between Kafka and Rabbi Nachman, both of whom burned their earlier writings. There's some really cool things online. You can find that and explore the connection between Rabbi Nachman and Kafka. Nonetheless, he then comes back to Ukraine, which is where he was, and he eventually starts to bring down some of the deepest and most creative Torah that exists. And he was, by all accounts, I mean, he was a genius. He's clearly a genius, and he was dynamic, and he was charismatic. And his Torah is incredible. And like I said, it very much speaks to our generation. Not everything, but a lot of it is really, really powerful. And, you know, Rabbi Nachman's main work, his major work, something called Likutei Moharan, the collected teachings of Moreinu, of our master, Rabbi Nachman. And that's where, you know, like, the kind of the core of his Torah is. But at a certain point, Rabbi Nachman realized that, like, people are asleep. You know, people are asleep, even as Hasidim, like, people are just, like, they're asleep at the wheel. And I need to do something different. So he started to teach over stories. He started to give over stories as a method of communicating ideas. And embedded within those ideas are some of the most powerful, you know, just really, really beautiful, you know, messages and quirky things and deep ideas, and it's kind of it you know, we know that a story does things differently. It allows us to internalize something differently. You're all familiar with the very famous Rashi that asks, why does the Torah begin with Breishit, right? It could have started with the first mitzvah, right? It could have started in was Parshat Bo. And then Rashi talked, we've been speaking about this recently, Rashi mentions this idea that, you know, because eventually the non-Jews are going to come and say, hey, you stole the land of Israel, and Rashi says, and Well, we just have to point to the Torah and say, God created the world and God gave us the land of Israel. So there you go. And we've spoken about how, like, it's not necessarily such a convincing idea today, but we have to internalize it. That's a very famous Rashi. But the Nitziv Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, he says, the reason why the Torah starts with stories is because that's really what brings us in, right? Like, by giving over these messages through the stories, if we just started with the mitzvah, it's like, oh, okay, where's that coming from? But we know what stories do and how it kind of speaks to us on a different level. Rabbi Nachman famously said, many people tell stories to put people to sleep. I tell stories to wake people up. To wake people up. So I want to learn a story, right? The best way, you know, we can talk a lot about, you know, the influence of these stories on Yiddish literature. I mentioned, you know, that this might be, we're not going to learn the original Yiddish, but it might, you know, is probably the first recorded Yiddish literature. Rabbi Nachman, the first Yiddish folktale writer who was very influential for all the Yiddish folk writers after him. We're not going to learn it in Yiddish, and there's a question as to whether or not he originally wrote them in Yiddish or in Hebrew, and then it translated into Yiddish. But what I want to do is learn one of his most famous stories. I should mention that there's a book of 13 stories that are called Sipurei Ma'asiot, and then outside of that, there's all these smaller stories that are scattered throughout. Today, you can find them all gathered together. But we're going to learn probably his most famous story tonight together. We'll see if we'll be able to, I don't know if we'll be able to do it all in one evening, but this is, I think a powerful message, a powerful idea, and interesting as well. Not necessarily, this is probably the most accessible initially, but you also see that there's layers and layers of meaning underneath it. Okay, there's a story just in terms of, this is a story that Rabbi Nachman tells as well about two poor guys, two, you know, beggars. And one guy was a Jew and one guy was a non-Jew. And these two beggars are sitting there and they're kind of struggling a little bit. And the Jew says to the non-Jew, he says, listen, I think I can get us a good meal. You have to come with me to shul. Tonight is Pesach, okay? And we'll, after shul, people will invite us. You just have to put on a kippah, pretend to be Jewish. People will invite us to the meal, and you know you'll get fed tonight. And so the non-Jew came along with the Jewish beggar. They come to shul, and sure enough, afterward they get invited, but they get separated. And they said, "Listen, we'll come back here after the meal, and you know we'll rendezvous here." And so they go their separate ways. And so the non-Jew goes to this Pesach Seder, and he's sitting there watching the everything happening, and he's kind of like just doing the stuff, pretending like he knows exactly what's happening, and he's getting really hungry. And then, you know, there's an Italian comedian who has a bit like this. You might have heard this. This is, you know, very, very classic thing of people coming from outside, and he's getting hungry, and they kind of bring him this, like, parsley, right? Dip it in water. Okay, fine, you know. And everything's kind of taking a bit of time. They're reading, and his stomach's grumbling, you know. And then finally they, like, they bring out a little bit of matzah, and he eats the matzah, and he's like, okay. And then they bring out this maror, and he eats the maror, and he's like, what is this stuff? And he's like, I'm out of here, and he leaves. And he goes back to the shul, and he sits there, and he's waiting at the shul. And the Jew isn't there, and he hours and hours, and the guy falls asleep. And then finally, after several hours, the Jewish guy comes back. He's kind of like loosened his belt, and he's walking, and, you know, he's kind of like satisfied. And the non-Jew, when he wakes up, he's like, what? Like, what's going on here? Like, I'm, you know, like, what was, that was the craziest meal. Like, you know, like, why would you tell me to go there? It was absurd. They didn't eat. And when they did eat, it was this disgusting food. And the Jew said, well, you just had to wait a little bit longer. You just had to wait. And then you get to the meal. And that's a story that Rabbi Nachman tells, right? And many people believe that he told that, I think, also in reference to a lot of things in life, right? That kind of like we are waiting, and it's like so impatient, we don't actually get to the stuff that we have to go through some hardship, and we don't actually get to the stuff that we're trying to get to. But it was also probably specifically told in relation to Rabbi Nachman and his teachings. That sometimes initially when you come across it, okay, I'm not sure about that, or it's kind of strange, or it's kind of weird, or it's a little bit bitter, or it's like, I don't get it. And you got to wait. And you got to be patient with it. Okay? Before we begin, does anybody have any questions on what I've said thus far? Has anybody here, just for my own reference point, has anybody here read the story of the lost princess?
Not recently enough to remember it.
Okay, good. Cool. What I want to do is first just read through the story. I brought the English as well, so if you want to read the English, it's on page 3. But I'm going to read through with the Hebrew because I think it's a good thing to read through. And sure. And we're just going to, I'm going to kind of read and translate, and stop me if I start to then explicate and start to go into, because that's not what I want to do. I want to read it and translate it, finish it, and then we can start going through it. You should know that there are many different ways to understand the story. Many different ways. And I want you to also think, before I start opening up a particular path to understanding what it's saying, I want you to consider how you understand it and what you think it means. Because it definitely, it's not just a story. That's for sure. Okay? So the this comes from, again, from Sefer Sipurei Ma'asiyot. And the story is called Ma'avedat Bat Melech, from the losing of the princess, meaning the lost princess, the lost princess. Ana ve'amar, Rabbi Nachman answered and said, right, answered who? Not clear. Baderech siparti ma'aseh shekol ma shehaya shom'a haya lo hirhur tshuva. On the way, it's not clear, there's some academics who believe they know exactly when he was traveling, but he was traveling, on the way he was traveling, and I told over this story that anybody who would hear it would have a thought of tshuva. A thought. Right? A thought. V'zohi, and this is the story. Masa b'melech echad, there's a story of one king, Shahayalo shisha banim ubatachat, who had 6 sons and 1 daughter. Ve'ota habat haita chashuva be'enav me'od, and this daughter was very important in his eyes. V'haya mechaveva biyoter, and he kind of loved her the most. V'haya mishashea ima me'od, and he used to play with her all the time. Pam achat, one time. Hayamitvaed ima biyachad, he was together with her, beize yom, on a particular day, v'nase berogez aleha, and he got angry with her, v'nizraka mipiv dibor, and he threw out from his mouth a saying, words just kind of flung out of his mouth, shalo tovi kachotach, der nedguter zel dichnen, I don't know if that's correct. The no good should take you. Balaila halcha lechadra. At night she went to her room. Uvaboker lo yadu heichan hi. And in the morning they didn't know where she was. V'haya aviya mitzaer meod. V'halach levaksha ana va'ana. And her father was in great pain. And he went to go seek her out here and there. He kind of walked everywhere. Amad hasheni lemalchut, machmat shirah shamelech mitzair maod. The second in command, often translated as the viceroy. What do they have here? The viceroy? Yeah, is that what it says? The viceroy stood up because he saw that the king was deeply pained. Ubikesh shit nulo misharet vesus umaot al hotzaot. And he requested that the king should give him a servant and a horse and money for expenses, and he went to go find her. And he searched after for a very long time until he found her. So he already kind of gives it away at the beginning that he does find her. And then it's funny, it's, you know, it's one of these interesting things of like how we can see the language of how the language is a little bit different here, like how telling over a story is a little bit different. Now, you know, and now he tells us how he found her. Like a modern writer wouldn't necessarily write that. This is seated here if you wish. Now he tells us how he found her. Vaya holech ana va'ana zman rav uve midbariot uve sadot uve yarim vaya mevaksha zman rav meod. And he would go here and there a long time in the desert and in the fields and in the forests, and he sought her out for a very long time. Vaya holech b'midbar, he was going in the desert. We're in kind of like 7-8 lines down there, Tania. V'ra'a shvil echad min hatzad, and he saw one path off to the side. So he's going in the desert, right? He's looking after, and he sees one path. Vaya me'ashev atzmo, and he kind of settled his mind or thought to himself, Basher shani holech kol kach zman rab midbar ve'eni achol lematzad. I'm kind of traveling such a long time in the desert and I can't find her. Elech b'shvil hazeh. Maybe I should go on this path. Ulay avo lemakom yishuv. I might come to a place of settlement, right? He's been going through the midbar. He's been going through this kind of wasteland. But maybe I'll go this way and find a settlement. Vaya holech zman rav. And he continued to travel for a long time. Achar kach roe mivtzar, shakorin shlas. V'kama chaylot, hayu omdim sham svivo. Afterwards, he saw a castle, and there were many soldiers guarding it. V'amivtzar haya na'e, umitaken, umisudar me'od, sorry, it's umitukan, umisudar me'od, im hachaylot. And this castle was beautiful and kind of orderly and structured, and you know, with the soldiers outside. And he was afraid, so he comes across this castle, and he's afraid that the soldiers will not let them in. And he kind of settled himself, and he said, "Elech venase, let me try, let me see." V'hishir hasus, and he left behind his horse. V'halach lemivtzar, and he went into the palace. V'hayu minichim oto, v'lo ikvu klal, and they kind of just let him go in. They let him walk through. V'hayaholech mecheder lecheder bli ikuv, and he could go from room to room without anything holding him back. U'ba lepaltin echad, and he kind of came to one, what do they say here?
Main hall.
Yeah, main hall, okay. One sanctuary, one, sure, why not? A hall, a large hall. V'ra'ash yashav sham ha-melech be'atara. And he saw there the king with a crown on his head. V'kama chaylot v'chayalot. And he saw these soldiers there, sham. V'kamen m'shorim b'kelim v'fanav. And there were people making music with instruments in front of him. V'haya sham na'ev yafe me'od, and it was beautiful and pleasant there. V'amelech v'shum echad mehem lo shaluhu klal. He's kind of sitting there, and the king and the people there aren't paying attention to him at all. V'ra'a sham me'adanim u'me'achalim tovim, and he saw there these delights and these wonderful foods. V'amad v'achal, and he got up and he ate. V'shachav b'zavit, and he sat on the corner, lirot ma naseh, just to kind of watch what was happening. V'ra'ash ha-melech tziva lehavya malka, and he saw that the king commanded to bring out the queen. Sounds familiar. V'halchu la'viota, and they went to bring her. V'ayasham rash gadol b'simcha gadola, and there was this great noise and great joy. V'amashorim hayu mezamrim v'amashorim me'od, b'asher she'aviu et ha-malka. And the musicians were singing and playing all this music in that they were bringing, because they're bringing the queen. V'hemidu la kisei b'yishivo atzlo, and they brought for her a throne, and they sat her upon it. V'hi haita habat melech hanizkar la'el, And this was the princess that we mentioned earlier. The who, and meaning the viceroy. Right? It's an interesting way of writing. Again, like that's not how a modern writer would do it. But, and he, meaning the viceroy, ra'a v'hikira, he saw her and recognized her. Achar kach hitzitza hamalka. Afterwards, the queen glanced. V'ra'ata echad sh'shocheb bezavit v'hikira oto. And she saw this person kind of sitting in the corner and she recognized him. V'amda mikisa, v'alcha l'sham. And she got up from her throne and she went there, v'nag'abo, and she touched him, v'shala oto, and she asked him, ha'ata makirati? And she said, do you recognize me? V'shivla hen, he said to her, yes, ani makirotach, at hi habat melech shenevda. You're the princess who was lost. V'shala ota, and he asked her, haich bat lekan, how'd you get here? V'heshiva, she answered, Basher, she'avi ha-melech nizrak mipiv dibor hanal. Bekan ha-makom hazeh hu lo tov. Because my father, the king, threw out from his mouth those words, and this place is the place of lo tov, of no good. No good. V'siper la she'avi ha-mitzta'er me'od. And he told her that her father was deeply pained over this. And he's been kind of looking for her and sent me and looking for her for many, many years. And he asked her, Ech ani yachol lehatzi otach? How can I take you out of here? V'amralo, and she said to him, She'i afshar lecha lehatzi oti? It's impossible to take me out of this place. Ki im kishatiyeh bocher lecha makom. The only way you can take me out is if you choose a place. V'tihiyeh yoshev sham shanachat. And you need to sit there for one whole year. V'chol hashana titga'agea acharai leotziyoti. The whole year you need to yearn for me to take me out. Uvechol zman sheyelach panai, sheyelach panai. And whenever you've got free time, tihye rak mitgaagea umevakesh umetzapel lahotzioti v'tihye mitane. Sorry, and whenever you've got time, you should only yearn for me and seek me out and anticipate and just desire to take me out. And you should fast. Uveyom ha'acharon me'ashana tiyeh mit'aneh. Right, on that final day, you should fast the whole day. V'lo tishan kol ha'me'et le'et. And don't sleep for 24 hours, for a whole day. Ve'alach ve'asakein. And that's exactly what he did. Uvasof ha'shana b'yom ha'acharon. And on the end of that year, on the final day, hayamitaneh, he was fasting, v'lo haya yashen, and he wasn't sleeping, ve'amad ve'halach l'sham, and he got up, and he went to that place. Where? Back to the castle. V'yaroe ilan, ve'alav gdalim t'puchim na'im me'od. And he saw a tree, and on the tree, the leaves were growing these beautiful apples. Vayamit avel einav meod, and his eyes desired them greatly. Ve'amad ve'achal misham, and he got up and he ate one of the apples. Ve'tekef kishachal hatapuach, and immediately when he ate the apple, nafal v'chatfu shena, he fell and sleep seized him. Vayayashen zman marbe meod, and he slept for a very long time. Vayah hamisharet minaer oto, velo hayah neor klal, and the servant was trying to wake him up, but he didn't awake at all. Acharkach hikitz mishnato, v'sha'al hamisharet heichan ani be'olam. Afterwards, he wakes up and he asks his servant, "Where am I?" V'siper lo hamaseh, and the servant tells him, שאתה ישן זמן מרבה מאוד, זה כמה שנים, ואני הייתי מתפרנס מהפירות. And he says, I was, you know, you've been sleeping for many years now, and the whole time I had a little apple business on the side, selling these apples. והיה מצער עצמו מאוד, and he was deeply pained. והלך לשם ומצא אותה, and so he gets up, and he goes back to the queen, right? He goes back to the castle. והייתה מצטערת לפניו מאוד, and the queen was in a lot of pain. כאילו בת באותו היום, because if he would have come on that very day, היית מוציא אותי מכאן, ובשביל יום אחד איבדת. If you would have come on that day, you would have taken me out of this. But because of only one day, you lost everything. אמנם, שלא לאכול היה דבר קשה מאוד. However, not to eat is really challenging. It was a big, big challenge for him not to eat on that one day. בפרט ביום האחרון, and specifically on the final day, אז מתגבר היצר הרע מאוד, then the evil urge is very, very strong. So let's jump after the parentheses. בכן תשוב לבחר לך מקום ותשב גם כן השנה כנל. She says, listen, I get it. It was hard. It was a hard challenge. And especially on the last day that you're going to be challenged so greatly. So he says, do it again. Find a place and sit there for the entire year. וביום האחרון תהיה רשאי לאכול. On that final day, you'll be able to eat. רק שלא תישן. But just don't sleep at all. ולא תשתה יין. Don't drink any wine. כדי שלא תישן. So that you should not fall asleep. כי העיקר. Because the main thing here is the sleep. Ve'alach ve'asakein, and he went and he did it. Ba'yom ha'acharon haya holech l'sham, v'ra'a ma'ayan holech. On that final day, he went there and he saw a flowing spring. Ve'hamar'eh adam v'areach shel yayin. Sorry, adom. And the mar'eh adom, and the appearance of the water was red. And it had the smell of wine. It's like an adult's Willy Wonka in the chocolate factory, right? V'shala t'misharet, and he asked the servant, Harita sheze mayan, v'raui sheye bo mayin, v'amareh mumit, v'areh shel yayin. Right, have you seen this? This spring? It should be filled with water. However, its appearance is red, and it smells like wine. והלך ותם מהמעיין. He just kind of dips his finger and just kind of, this is a weird thing. ונפל וישן מיד. And he fell and וישן מאוד. And he falls asleep immediately. כמה שנים. For many years. עד 70 שנה. He sleeps for 70 years. והיו הולכים חילות רבות. עם השייך להם מה שנוסע אחריהם. And he... basically, all these soldiers would pass by with all their stuff, you know, in their caravans. והמשרת התמין עצמו מחמת החילות, and the servant kind of hid himself on the side because of all these soldiers coming through. אחר כך הלכה מרכבה ועגלות צב, ושם ישבה הבת מלך. But afterwards, these chariots came by, and, you know, these carts, and there was the... princess. Ve'amda sham etzlo, and she got up next to him, ve'arda, and she descended, ve'ashva etzlo, ve'hikira oto. She sees on the side the viceroy sleeping. Ve'hayta mina'eret oto me'od, ve'lo nina'er, and she was trying to shake him, but he wasn't waking up. Did I skip something?
No.
I think I skipped something in the Hebrew here.
Page 4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry. Yeah, no, that's right. V'tchila lekabel alav asher kama v'kama yigiyot v'tirchot gedolah meod shehayu lo kama ze kama v'kama shanim kedei lehotzi oto b'shvil oto hayom shehaya yachol lehotzieni ve'avdo. Right? Basically, he had taken on all of these, you know, big efforts. And for many, many years, he had invested greatly in order to take me out. And it's, again, only because of that one day that he could have taken me out, and he lost it all. And she was crying a lot over this. Because she had great compassion for him. And also upon herself, that I'm here for so long. Veni achol latzeit, right? Because I can't go out, so she's in great pain. Achar kach lakcha pachila, pachila. How do you pronounce that? Mitpachat. We'll say that in Hebrew. A handkerchief. She took out a handkerchief. Me'al rosha, from her head. V'katva alav bidmaot shela, and she wrote on it with her tears. V'hinicha etzlo, and she placed it next to him. Ve'amda v'yashva b'merkavta v'nasa misham, and she. She got back on her chariot and she left. Achar kach hikitz v'sha'ala t'misharet. Afterwards, he woke up and he asked his servant, Heichan ani be'olam, where am I in this world? V'siper lo kol ha'maseh, and the servant told him the whole story, v'shechelot rabot halchu sham, that all these soldiers passed by. Vishaita kan mirkava hanizkar la'el, and there was this chariot, as we mentioned. Ushaita bochalav, and the queen, the lost princess, cried over him. Vaita tzoeket sheish rachmanut ala ve'aleha, and she cried out that there should be compassion for him and for her. B'toch kach hitzitz v'ra'a asher. How would you pronounce that? Pachila? Pachala? Mitpachat? I'm not sure. He saw the handkerchief placed next to him. The sha'al, and he asked, bless you, me'ayin zeh, and he says, what is this? Ve'shiv lo shikatva alav be'admot, and she said back to him, she wrote on this with her tears. Ve'lakcha ve'herim ota keneged ha'shemesh, he took it, and he lifted it up in front of the sun. Ve'itchil lirot ha'taotiot, and he started to see the letters. And he saw what was written there, all kind of what she accepted upon herself and all of her crying out. And that now at this time, she's no longer in the castle. Where is she? Kim shivakesh har shel zahav umivtsar shel margaliot sham timtzaini. She's no longer in the castle that she was, but rather he has to seek out a golden mountain and a castle made of pearls. And if he finds that, he'll find her there. Vishira temisharet, he leaves behind the servant. Vihinicho, ve'alach levado levaksha, he goes on his own to find her. Ve'alach kama shanim levaksha, and again he traveled for many years in order to seek her out. Ve'ashav atzmo, and he thought to himself, shebevadai biyishuv lo nimtza har shel zahav mivtsar shel margaliot. Definitely in settled places, we're not going to find this golden mountain. It's clearly something different. This golden mountain, this castle made of pearls. Kihu baki b'mapata olam. He was well known. He's an expert in geography, right? Shekorin Landkart. Velkein Elech Elamidbariot. He says, now I've got to go back to the desert. Velach Levaksha Bemidbariot Kama Bekama Shanim. And again, he searches through the deserts for many, many years. Acharkach Ra'a Adam Gadol Me'od. He finally chances upon a giant. She'eno Enoshi Klal. He's not human at all. She'e Adam Kolkach, gadol kolkach, right? It's not human at all for a person to be this big. He's a giant. Vinose ilan gadol, and he was holding a large tree in his hand. Shibishuv eino nimtza ilan gadol kazeh, that in the settled world, there's no trees as big as this. Ve'oto aish shaloto, and that man asked him, Miata, who are you? Ve'amar lo, and he said to him, Ani Adam, I'm a human being. Ve'tama, ve'amar, shezeh kol kach zman, shani b'midbar, ve'lo ra'iti me'olam b'kan Adam. The giant was kind of confused. He says, I've been here in this desert for so long, and I've never seen a person before. Ve'siper lo kol ha'maaseh ha'nizkar la'el, shum mevakesh har shel zahav, u'mivtzar shel margaliot. And the viceroy says to him that basically I'm seeking out this golden mountain made of gold and a castle made of pearls. Amarlo, the giant, says back to him, "Bevadai eino benimtza klal, it doesn't exist at all." V'dachaoto, he pushes him away. V'amarlo shesiwat dato b'davar shtut, and he said to him that people have kind of filled your mind with foolish things. Ki bevadai eino nimtza klal, because such a place does not exist at all. V'itchil livkot me'od, and the viceroy began to cry. Ki bevadai behechrechu, because it must be. Be'ez makom, in some place. Behechrechu nimtza be'ez makom, definitely exists somewhere. V'udacha oto, and the viceroy is pushing him and pressing him. Ki the giant was present to say, Kibavadai Davar Shtut Amrulafanav. Definitely they filled your mind with nonsense. Vahu Amar, and the viceroy said, Shibavadai Yesh. It definitely exists. So they go back and forth. Amar Lo, the giant says to him, Ladati Hushtut, Hishtut. According, I believe this is nonsense. Ah, however, machmat shata mitakesh hena, ani memane al kol hachayot ase lemancha. So he says, because you're being so stubborn, I, who am appointed over all of the animals, right? I look after all of the animals. That's my job. I'm going to do something for you. And I'm going to call all of the animals, kihem ratzim et kol ha'olam, because they're running throughout the whole world. And so, if such a place exists, the animals will know about it. Ulai teda achat mehem mehar mivtzar kanal. Maybe one of them will know of such a mountain and castle. V'karat kulam mikaton v'ad gadol, kol minei achayot v'shalotam. And this giant calls all of the animals, from small to big, all of the animals, and he asked them, "Kulam heshivu shelo ra'u," and they all said, "We've never seen such a place." Ve'amarlo, and the giant says to him, "Ra'a sheshtut safru lefanecha." Don't you see that they've told you nonsense? Im tishma shuv la'acharecha. If you're listening, you should turn around. Ki bevadai lo timtza ki einenu ba'olam, because it doesn't exist. It's not in the world. V'hu hiftzir me'od. And he pressed him very much. Ve'amar shebehechrechu nimtza bevada, and he says, it must exist. Amar lo, the giant now says, Hine b'midbar nimtza sham achi. In the desert there is my brother. V'hu mimane al kol ha'ofot, and he is responsible for all the birds. Ulai yodim heim machmat shehem porchim ba'avir ba'gavo. Maybe the birds will know because they fly above. Ulai ra'u haru mivtzar hanal. Maybe they've seen such a mountain or castle. V'telech elav v'tomar lo shani shalachti oto elav. Go to him and tell him that I sent you. V'alach kama v'kama shanim levakshu. He continued to travel for many years in order to find him. U'matza shuv adam gadol me'od. And he saw again a giant. V'nasa gam ken ilan gadol. And he also was holding a large tree. Vishalo togam kein kanal, and he asked him for such a thing, for this mountain castle. Veshiv lo kol hamaseh u'she'achiv shalchu elav, and he said everything that happened that his brother sent him to him. V'hu dacha oto gam kein, and that brother also pushed him off. Ki bevadai eino nimtza, because such a thing does not exist. V'hu hiftzir oto gam kein, and again the viceroy pushed back. Ve'amar lo. And the giant says, Hine ani memanel kol haofot. I'm responsible. I look after all of the birds. Ekraotam, I will call them. Ulay yodim hey, maybe they will know. V'kara kol ha'ofot, and he called all the birds. V'shalat kulam mikaton ve'ad gadol, v'shivu she'enam yodim mehar u'mivtzar ha'nizkar la'el. And all the birds says, we've never seen such a thing, of a mountain and a castle. Amar lo halo ataro esh bevada inenu be'olam. The giant says to him, do you not see that such a thing doesn't exist in the world? Im tishmali shuv le'acharecha ki bevada inenu. If you're listening to me, turn around because it doesn't exist. V'hu hiftzir oto v'amar shebevada yeshino be'olam. And he pushed back and he says, no, it exists. Amar lo, the giant says back to him, lahalan b'midbar nimsa shamachi. We have another brother in the desert over there who is responsible for all of the winds. V'heim ratzim kol olam, and the winds travel throughout the whole world. Ula yodim heim, maybe they know. V'alach kama v'kama shanim levakesh matza adam gadol gam kein kenizkar le'el. And again, the viceroy travels for many, many years until he finally finds one more giant. V'nasa gam kein ilan gadol, and he's also holding a large tree. V'sha'al oto gam kein kinizkar le'el, and again he asks him about the castle and the mountain. V'shiv lo kol ha'maaseh, and he tells him the whole story. V'dacha oto gam kein, but the giant again rejects him. He says such a thing does not exist. V'hiftzir oto gam kein, presses him back. V'amar lo shilama ano yikare she'avo kol haruchot v'sha'al otam. So finally, the giant says, you know what? For you, I will call all the winds, and I will ask them as well. V'kara otam u'ba'u kol haruchot v'shalat kulam. He asked all of the winds. V'lo yadu shum echad mehem mehar u'mivtzar. But none of them were aware of this mountain and castle. V'amar lo, and the giant says to him, hala taro'eh sh'shtut safru lefanecha. Did you not, can't you finally see that everyone's just telling you nonsense? V'itchil levakot me'od, and the viceroy began to cry greatly. Ve'amar, and he said, ani yodea shiyeshno bevadai, I know that there is definitely. B'toch kach ra'a sheba od ruach echad. As he's crying, they notice that another wind comes along. V'ka'as alav ha'memaneh, and he's Karlel, and this giant who's responsible for all the winds, he gets angry at the wind. Madua nitacheret lavo, why did you delay in coming? Halo gazarti shiavo kol haruchot, I decreed that all of the winds should come. V'lama lo vati mahem, why did you come with them? Heshiv lo, and the wind says back to him, shenit akavti machamat shayiti tzarich laset bat malka el harshal zahav mivtzar shal margaliot. I was held back, I was delayed, because I needed to carry the princess to a mountain of gold and a castle made of pearls. V'sameach me'od, and he was very happy, I assume it's the viceroy, or the giant, could be anybody. V'sha'al ha'memaneh taruach, and the giant asks the wind, mayakar sham? What's precious over there in that place? V'amar lo shekol hadvarim heim sham biyoker gadol, or yakar gadol, right? He says everything is precious in that place. V'amar hamemanel ruchot lasheni lamalchut, and the giant who's responsible for the winds, he says to the viceroy. Since you've been searching for her for so long and working so hard, maybe now you're going to run into some financial problems. I'm going to give you this tool. When you place your hand inside of it, you'll be able to receive money from there. V'gazar al haruach hanal shiolich oto l'sham, and he commanded the wind to carry the viceroy and bring him to that place. Uba haruach se'ara v'nasa oto l'sham, and the wind came in a storm and brought him to that place. V'hevi oto el shar, the wind brought him to a gate Vayuomdim sham chelot shelo hinichu lekanes la'ir. And there were these, or chayalot, soldiers who didn't allow him to enter. Veoshit yado lakli velakach meot. And he went, put his hand into this, you know, tool, this vessel, and he took out a. Did I skip something here?
No. Why is it chayalot?
I think that's what I think it's chaylot here, which is like soldiers. That's just the word, as opposed to chayalim.
Yeah.
I think that's why I'm pronouncing it chaylot. I think as opposed to chayalot, it's chaylot, which is like the strong ones. He reached into his bag and he took out the money, the shechadotam, and he bribed them. V'nichnas l'toch ha'ir, he went into the city. V'ayta ir na'e, and it was a beautiful city. V'alach al gvir v'sachar l'mizanot, and he went to this wealthy man, and he rented, and he kind of bought money. Ki tzarich lishot sham, because he needed to wait there for a long time. Ki tzarich lasum sichlo chochma lotzia, because he needed to kind of use great insight, great wisdom, in order to figure out how to take her out. V'eich shehotzia lo siper. How he took her out, Rabbi Nachman didn't tell us. Ubasof hotzia. But in the end, he took her out. Okay. That's the story. Wow, is it 9:30 already?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. We're not going to spend a long time because it's 9:30. That's the challenge of these stories. What we'll do maybe next week is go into the deeper meaning, but we'll take a few moments to go through it. I don't think we can explore the story without reading this whole story first, so that's the right thing to do, to read the story. But of course, it's, you know, even though it's an old Ukrainian folktale that he took, and it's a tale as old as time, right? Everything here, every step, every movement, every action is a revelation of something great. And so the question is what? And I'd love to just open it up for a few moments to have a suggestion of what's the story talking about? What is the story of? That's a hard thing.
Well, last question first. How was this before or during or after the era of like Grimm Brothers fairy tales?
Well, this story was written in the first century of the 1800s. So it's like, I think 1802, 1804, something like that. Early 1800s.
But how does that fit in with Grimm?
Probably older.
This was also towards the end of his life. He passed away quite young. He passed away I think he was 38 when he passed away. And so he had he was incredibly prolific. At the end of his life, he started to focus on, not solely, but in a concerted way on his stories. So, sorry, around the same time, interesting. Again, that's the whole, you know, his whole thing and all of these stories, they are not overtly Jewish. Right, they're not overtly Jewish stories. He borrowed, and as you know, we'll have maybe opportunity to look at some of the other stories in the future. And you know, they're about these sorts of things. You know, these kind of fairy tale stories. I mean, this is it's a wild fairy tale, and there have been beautiful renditions of it, and a lot of illustrated versions of this, and there's new illustrated versions of it coming out all the time because you can see how kind of fantastical it is. But. It's coming to communicate something very, very deep. So again, I'd love to get a sense of anybody that has some broad strokes of what this is talking to us about.
Is that a thought that came to mind? Six sons and one daughter.
Mm.
Is that 7 days of the week? And
yeah.
Daughter,
yeah.
Shabbat.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, well, let's hold that for a moment before, because that'll be a good place to jump off onto.
Journey, not the destination. There's a lot of...
Okay, well, it's interesting because he doesn't reveal at the end kind of what happens.
So it's
right?
All about the journey, and we're just doing the journey and journey and journey.
Yeah, so who is... Metaphorically, okay, obviously you spoke about Shabbat. We'll talk about that in a moment. But, like, when we have a king, who's the king? King, the king's God, right? The king is God. And the king has six sons and one daughter. Again, it is quite late, so I'm not going to go into great detail here. This story, according to most, is the story of the Shekhinah, the divine feminine presence, which is Shabbat, right? Shabbat represents the divine feminine, the Shekhinah, the sphera of Malchut. And so, again, not the time to go into deep Kabbalah, but maybe in our next time, that's exactly what we will do. The Malchut is the seventh and seemingly the lowest of the Sefirot, but it's the highest. It receives from everything else. It is the seventh day of the week. And it represents this idea that in the world that Hashem created, the Shekhinah is missing. Right? That's what this story is talking about. The Shekhinah is missing in the world. And our entire job, who's the viceroy?
Us.
Either as a collective, as Am Yisrael, or us, as individuals. It is the story of the Jewish people traveling to seek out, to try to find the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is the feminine divine presence that is not in this world, that is missing from this world. The divine Malchut, Shekhinah, the Bat Melech, the princess, all of these represent the idea that God is not imminently experienced in reality. Can be, but often is not. And there's something missing from this world. This world is a kind of not a full expression from our perception of the divine will. That, according to the Kabbalah, is how reality had to be created. So, for example, just at the very beginning, the king loves his daughter so much, he spends so much, she is really the purpose of everything, the Shekhinah. But then in a moment, words, when he says these words, it's like, what's going on there? And so many of the commentators understand this to be, this is the moment that God speaks creation into being. And in order to speak creation into being, to create this world, God needed to also constrict himself. There's a place of din, which is like anger, a place of constriction. God constricts himself and creates a world in which we don't always experience God in this world. That is a necessity for the creation of the world. That is also the birth of evil, according to Kabbalah. Right? That God created a world in which he doesn't fully exist. From our perception.
I was going to say, wouldn't that therefore be God's own birth?
So God speaks to the highest infinitude of God, meaning God creates a world that even though it seems as if he does not exist there, he exists even there. It's a paradox, but it's even more infinity. Right, do you understand that in some sort of way? That it's the fact that God creates a world where even in the world that he seemingly does not exist, he exists there. That is the Kabbalistic concept of what's called tzimtzum, of constriction. That God, in order to create the world, had to constrict his presence from this reality to make space for us. But yet, we live in a world now that's filled with evil.
That's the whole concept of free choice, isn't it?
Exactly. Mm. That we needed to have free choice. Mm. And so that's this idea of God speaking, saying you should go to the place of Lo Tov. I mean, it's always like, why would the king say that to his daughter, right? But again, it's this idea that speaking creation into reality necessitated a space, an empty space. What's called the Chalal HaPanui, the empty space. And it's within that God made this creation where we can exist with free choice. And we then have to make a decision. We have to constantly make decisions through which, using our free choice, we seek out the Shekhinah. We seek out the divine presence, the divine feminine that is missing from reality. That is our job.
So then the giants represent the goyim?
No. Good question. Many of the soldiers do, okay, throughout the story. And again, like I said, we could go through this, not just line by line, but word by word about what he's doing, and he does. And there are many commentaries who do that. And you don't need to do that. I'll just mention, you know, the most famous, the accessible entry point into the story for a lot of us is Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, who wrote Rabbi Nachman's stories, right? He translated and annotated them. You have, like, you know, similar to like in an art scroll thing, you have one line of text and an entire page of commentary, and that's exactly what he does here. I'm not going to touch the giants at this moment. The giants represent the upper worlds. The giants represent the upper worlds. That's the second half of the story. Once he starts to kind of go through the upper worlds, and that's where it gets like, it's like, really, what's going on there? That's really deep and lofty. Kabbalah, we can understand that to an extent. The first half, let's just kind of take a few moments to just try to unpack. I mean, what were some of the things that stood out to you in terms of, I would say, like, you know, anchor points that seem familiar. It's like, oh, huh. That sounds like I know where that could be from. Anything stand out to you?
Falling asleep for 7 years.
Okay, so falling asleep for 7 years. This is the second time, right? But who falls asleep for 70 years?
When I fall asleep, it isn't like there's 70 years between the
animals. Yeah, beautiful, oh, yeah. Right? That is definitely Noah, and it's
why.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also Choni HaMe'agel, Choni the circle drawer, who falls asleep for 70 years. The first time, what happens, he goes and he's not allowed to eat. And what does he do? He sees an apple, which is interesting because it's not necessarily an apple, but, you know, but who is that? What's that? Adam and Chava. And he eats. And so it's a failure, right? He has a test. Adam and Chava have a test. He fails the test and missed opportunity. And then along comes that second test. Who's that test for? Noah, right? Noah, who, you know, can come out and basically start things anew and fix whatever it was that Adam. But what does Noah do? He plants a vineyard and he gets drunk and he falls asleep. It also, of course, represents the Beit HaMikdash and the Batei Mikdash, the first Beit HaMikdash and the second Beit HaMikdash, and then being destroyed. Again, each of these things you could explore. Maybe we will kind of leave that in a sense. But what
so what you say at the beginning of the Kohen calling out the Kohen is very
Purim.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure, right? And the story of Esther is the story of the hidden queen, right? Is the story of the Shekhinah being hidden, right?
It's also interesting that she sees him and goes over and touches him. Like it specifically says touches.
Touches it, right?
Yeah.
And I think one of the beautiful things here, right, is because who is the queen? The queen is Hashem, right? The lost princess is Hashem. And so there's two things that I want to leave us with here, because I did tell my wife I'd be home before 10 o'clock. The queen, right? number one, the
but
sense...
Recorded yet.
I'll send it to her after. The sense that... the queen or the princess, the lost princess, is in pain, right? She's pained by this. And that's an essential thing for us to understand as well, of Imo Anochi Betzara, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in pain with the Jewish people when we're in, you know, when we're in pain. In this very long galut, this very long exile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, the Shekhinah, I should say, is in pain and desires us that we should take her out. But yet we've got work to do, right? It's not just like, oh, it's gonna be done for us. We have work to do. What is the work?
Gotta cry.
Gotta cry. Gotta do two things. Yeah, tshuva, but I'll say the tshuva comes from two things in the Torah of Rabbi Nachman. Yearning, right? And that's a very strong theme here, right? Because if you think about the giants at the end, whatever that means, what do they do initially?
They laugh at
him. Sorry, they laugh at him. They push him away. They say, no. And then he says, no, right? there's got to be. She told me, she wrote, I mean, that one of the most beautiful moments is that she writes in her tears in her handkerchief and he holds it up to the sun and understands like this hidden message, understands what it is that she's trying to say and where he's got to go. And he can understand there what that represents, whether that's the Torah or the Kabbalah, right? The hidden wisdom. And he sees, oh, like what's going on? And he knows that it's there. Even the whole world can be telling him. Even the upper world can be telling him, no, it's not. It doesn't exist. But he knows, and so he yearns, and he's persistent, and he's committed, and he's passionate. And then they say, okay, fine. You know, maybe this thing, and then right, and that doesn't, and it doesn't happen immediately. And then, okay, fine. You know, and he keeps on going. So it's yearning.
The very first thing she says to him is, "Yearn for me." That's the very first, and it's like. And do everything and yearn for me when you're not, you're just, that's all you have to do.
Beautiful.
Can we read into this that Viceroy himself is not a Jew? But this is his journey, his spiritual journey to almost becoming, or converting to becoming a Jew.
I would say that like we do with any literature, you can read anything you want into it. And not be, you know, obviously there's things that are like, well, it's definitely not. Is this like, you know, I don't know. Like, is this the story of, I don't know, like think of some absurd, like, no, it's not that. But it could be, who knows. Certainly within the traditional interpretations, it's talking about the journey of the soul, the journey of the Jewish people, in terms of, you know, it could have been that anybody could have done it, but now, we're the ones who specifically have to do it, right? That as Jewish people, we've got that specific tasks specifically to take the Shekhinah out. And so, yes, to yearn. It's to yearn and to cry, right? And this idea that, like, after the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the gates of prayer were closed, but the gates of tears are still open. And Rabbi Nachman spoke a lot about that. Like when, and you can see there's moments in the story, like when he starts to cry, that it opens things up, right? Because, like, it's coming from that real place. So, what speaks to me here is, of course, you know, this a sense of the pain of exile, right? And that's what we're in right now, the deep pain of exile. I think for a long time, a lot of us, especially here, it's like, no worries, you know, it's all good. And now we're in a deep state of like, no worries. And there's lo tov, and there's no good, and there's evil in the world, and we see that, and we're like, okay, so we have, it's a wake up. But what are we waking up to? We're just waking up to being like, you know, I don't know, like a social media warriors and stand, like, that's good, but that's not the main job here, right? The main job is to be yearning for the Shekhinah, is to be yearning and seeking out the lost princess that comes from a desiring of God in our life, and that comes from, a sense of crying, right? Of really crying, and I think we've got what to cry over these days. But again, when we're crying, we're not just crying that there should be like a two-state solution. that's not the ultimate vision. It's not. We're crying that there should be, you know, peace for all of humanity, revealed good before our very eyes. That's what we believe in. Not a two-state solution. We know that'll be a disaster, right? Mm-hmm. We're praying for revealed goodness for all of humanity. That's what we're here for. And so Rabbi Nachman reminds us of that with this story. He reminds us of that. And so I'll make, based upon your suggestions or your thoughts, I'll make a decision as to whether we continue with this or not, or jump into so many stories and so many wonderful stories. But Rabbi Nachman told stories to wake us up. And I think that's the whole point, is like, this story should be waking us up. It should be waking us up.